Radio EcoShock.
You want to know the future climate. I know you do. Are we already committed to a hotter Earth? How much hotter? How soon? Will climate action matter? All these questions are approached in an important new paper. It has an unassuming title, Estimating the Timing of Geophysical Commitment to 1.5 and 2 degrees C of Global Warming. The lead author is Michelle T. Dvorak. Michelle is a research scientist from the University of Washington in Tacoma. Michelle Dvorak, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Your paper says we will probably cross the 1.5 degree C threshold within this decade. That seems sooner than we expected. Would you tell us how you did your research so that we can know how you would arrive at the possibility we would cross 1.5 in this decade?
So we took a simple climate model called FAIR, the Finite Amplitude Impulse Response Model, that we constrained to match observed warming so we knew that the model was reliable. And we input emissions time series from a variety of realistic emissions pathways. And then we shut off those emissions in every year for the next 60 years along a median emissions pathway. And we modeled the temperature response following that cessation of emissions.
It's interesting to me that there are very complex models where people try to put in every possibility, you know, the flow of the air, the temperature of the sea, the whole thing. And then there are models that are fairly simple based on simple premises. But sometimes the simple models, when you run them backwards, do show the past quite accurately. So do you have confidence in the model that you used?
At the core of a simple climate model, the one that we use, is essentially just a two-box representation of the atmosphere and surface ocean and then the deep ocean. And those are coupled together with a coefficient of heat exchange between the two. So it's really idealized. It's a one-dimensional climate system, and it's dependent upon certain climate variables, like the magnitude of aerosols and the magnitude of greenhouse gas forcing in the atmosphere, and also Earth sensitivity to CO2. So we allow each of these variables to change, to vary within distributions of what is considered the best available science. And as a result, we can actually get quite a broad temperature spread. But then the key is that we then constrain that model. We only select model configurations that give us an accurate reproduction of both the trend in observed warming and also an ocean heat content change. And both of these are measured experimentally. In this way, we get that really good agreement with observed temperatures. And I think it's worth saying that we don't need fancy representations of atmospheric or oceanic circulations that are used in more complex global climate models to resolve temperatures. The basic physics of energy balance gets us pretty much most of the way to the right answer, and also is a lot more flexible and computationally efficient.
One thing I appreciate in your new paper, which was published in Nature Climate Change, you don't just count carbon dioxide. What other warming gases did you consider?
So we looked at a total of 39 gases and what are called forcing agents. We looked, for example, of course, CO2 is considered, but we also consider methane and nitrous oxide, which are the other two primary greenhouse gases that warm the climate. Then there are greenhouse gases such as halogens and CFCs and HFCs, which are in much lower concentrations but also serve to warm the climate. We look at ozone. But most importantly, we look at what are called aerosol precursors, which are sulfur dioxide, sulfur oxides, and nitrous oxides. And these create what are called aerosols, and these act to cool the climate.
Right. I was really interested in that because this has been a debate for some time, is how much is our pollution, so to speak, these aerosols, the little particles that go up into the atmosphere, how much is it cooling the Earth? And there have been different estimates over time. What did your study find?
So there's a lot of uncertainty in the magnitude of cooling from aerosols, from air pollution. The most recent estimates from the IPCC, Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, suggest anything between 0.1 and 0.8 degrees of cooling over the industrial period could be due to aerosols. Our study narrows this down a bit to, we have a median estimate of about 0.22 degrees of cooling, which is removed when you abruptly cease all emissions.
Yeah, that's a problem that I sort of have in the paper. There are several references to abrupt cessation of emissions, and I can see that as sort of a scientific measurement, but unless we get hit by an asteroid or something wrecks this civilization, that seems really unlikely. Does your model also work for the possibility of a gradual decline of warming gases and aerosols, say, over many decades?
Yes, it does. Because it is quite a fast model to run, we're able to do any number of simulations, thousands or even millions, and modeling a more gradual emissions reduction scenario was part of our study. Regardless, we do find that even though an abrupt cessation is unlikely, and it does lead to more rapid warming because you remove aerosols, we find that it is still the best case scenario in terms of avoided warming. Any gradual cessation of emissions or a gradual ramping down of emissions that doesn't use net negative carbon capture methods would need to occur over about 5 years or less in order to avoid 1.5 degrees of warming.
Right. And the new paper works on a fascinating quirk of the future. You say the climate is committed to boundaries like 1.5 degrees or 2 degrees before actually reaching that warming. Could you please explain?
Right. Because we've co-emitted all of these aerosols alongside of these warming gases, it means that we have not yet experienced the full magnitude of warming from the greenhouse gases that we've already emitted. So by modeling this abrupt cessation scenario, we're able to exactly figure out how much warming our past emissions would have caused had we not obscured some of it with these aerosols.
So we'll get a sort of temporary warming or overshoot when we do finally reach net zero. How long could that last?
Well, we find that a shut off of emissions in 2021 leads to an overshoot that lasts approximately 18 years before temperatures come back down to the present day. So it's a fairly significant peak in warming.
Right. And I think on some pathways you found the overshoot could last even up to 48 years.
That's correct. We did find that.
That's a long time. And, you know, during that hotter than final temperature, if we want to call it that, it seems to me feedbacks and irreversible damage to species could happen even if Earth then cools a few tenths of a degree. What are your thoughts?
I completely agree. I think that even though that this phenomenon of peak warming can kind of be brushed under the rug in some cases if we choose to think about long-term warming, it's definitely relevant to ecosystems and parts of the climate system that respond on these timescales of decades. Sea ice being one of them. So if you have sustained warming of maybe 1.5 degrees, I'm not precisely sure what the science is saying on that, but if you have sustained warming for several decades, you would expect a seasonally ice-free Arctic, which would have profound ramifications for ice obligate marine species, polar bears. Yeah, so I think that it's important not to overlook what kind of effects that warming would have on these ecosystems.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org. This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith, and our guest is Michelle Dvorak from the University of Washington. We're talking about some new science. So just to be clear for listeners, what your paper finds is that we will have peak warming, and then we will have final warming, so to speak, a more stabilized temperature. And so we've just been talking about the peak warming that could last from 11 to 48 years or for a period of time before it cools down. And my thoughts about that, too, are that humans are not very patient and we're doubtful. So people may get disappointed if temperatures keep on getting hotter after making sacrifices to get off fossil fuels.
Right. Even if it's rapid temperature change that isn't meant to last a long time, I think if we're seeing year after year, 1.5 degrees of warming despite a lot of efforts, then yeah, you're right. I think that would probably disturb a lot of people, which is probably why it's important for us to understand the full magnitude of our past emissions.
Various studies and institutions have set 2 degrees C of warming as a boundary humans must avoid. According to the work of your paper, even with modern emissions, when would Earth be committed to 2 degrees of warming?
So we find that we would be committed to peak warming of 2 degrees by 2057 with 66% confidence.
Wow, that's within the lifetimes of most of our listeners. So in 2022, we are far from moderate emissions. In fact, coal plants are increasing and economic growth is still based on fossil fuels. That's the model. How did you calculate how soon Earth crosses that warming point? Did you include also cases with the worst case scenario, our current pathway?
We did. We didn't include our actual emissions from 2016 onward because we were using modeled emission scenarios. But you're right in saying that we are following something more like maybe a higher emission scenario such as SFC3, whereas our middle of the road scenario was looking at SFP2. So we modeled cessation of emissions in every year following all of these emission scenarios. For 1.5 degrees, that temperature threshold, our estimates of when that will be crossed don't really change because it's so soon, and the emissions pathways don't diverge that much until around the 2030s. But certainly our 2-degree estimate is smaller if we consider a higher emission scenario, or I should say we cross it sooner.
Along with new science from Michael Mann and Kevin Trenberth and others, your team assumes Earth temperatures will stabilize at whatever point we reach, like when net zero emissions finally happen. But in the end, your paper says the model does not include some major destabilizing possibilities. Can you talk about that, please?
Yeah, you're right. So we assume a constant feedback parameter. So that means that we assume that the Earth's response to its warming response to CO2 emissions is constant with time and with emissions. But there's a lot of research that suggests that feedback will change over time with continued warming. And most of the research points to what you say, destabilizing feedbacks. So feedbacks that would lead to more warming. So given that our study doesn't capture those climate feedbacks, we would expect that these estimates would only become underestimates as the climate continues to warm.
And I suppose in the good news department, you find we are not already committed to dangerous warming by past emissions. I find that surprising. How is that possible?
Well, we're not committed to long-term warming, dangerous levels of long-term warming. The optimistic message here is that by considering all emissions, we also consider those other greenhouse gases, primarily methane and nitrous oxide. Given that those are much shorter lived than CO2, one would expect that when we stop all of those emissions and those are removed from the atmosphere, and then we can observe quite a bit more cooling than we would otherwise if we only removed CO2 or only stopped emitting CO2. So that's the optimistic message, is that if we consider end-of-century warming, then we're not committed to 2 degrees of warming in this century.
The Northern Hemisphere just went through a bruising summer of extreme heat around the world, followed by record-breaking storms in some places. But we're still in the very early stages of climate change. And I think one of the big questions is about equilibrium climate sensitivity. Could you explain what it is and why that matters in any scientific work?
That's a good question. Equilibrium climate sensitivity refers to the magnitude of temperature change that would follow a doubling of CO2. So that temperature response depends strongly on that feedback parameter that I mentioned before, which could change over time. So we could find that, and research does suggest that we are living right now in a lower climate sensitivity state than we might expect in the following centuries. And that's an active area of research. We're trying to narrow that uncertainty in climate sensitivity and figure out how much it might change in the future.
So the climate might become more sensitive to emissions as we go along.
That's correct.
Wow, that's worth knowing. According to Table 2 of this paper, to have 66% confidence in staying at or below 1.5 degrees C in long-term warming, the carbon budget leaves 340 gigatons left to burn. So right now we're emitting about 36 gigatons of carbon a year. Basically, in the back of envelope calculations, that means we only have 10 years to get off fossil fuels. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's just about right. And it's definitely less time and less carbon than previous research has suggested, but I would agree with that. Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure if I got this right, but it seemed like your paper suggests humans will not warm the planet above 2 degrees C, even if we take until 2080 to reach net zero emissions. Did I get that right?
Well, I think the difference there is that it is, if you are thinking about this peak in warming that follows the cessation of emissions, or if you're considering longer term kind of pseudo-equilibrium end of century warming, that 340 gigatons carbon dioxide, that estimate is for peak warming of 2 degrees. That means that if in 20 years from now, we abruptly cease all emissions, we would expect a 66% chance that temperatures would be above 2 degrees. But long-term 2100 temperatures of 2 degrees after the climate has had time to cool from that warming peak won't be reached until 2080.
And what are you working on now? What's coming up for you?
We are very interested in, like I said, estimating equilibrium climate sensitivity. One area of research is using past climate to help constrain the present-day estimate of climate sensitivity. So looking at time periods like the last glacial maximum, when we had ice sheets all over the northern hemisphere, but also even further back to the period called the Pliocene, when greenhouse gas concentrations were similar to today and temperatures were about 3 degrees warmer. So we are interested in looking at that time period in the climate and estimating the climate sensitivity during that time and seeing how similar or different it might be to present-day sensitivity.
From the University of Washington, we've been speaking with research scientist Michelle Dvorak. She is lead author of the paper Estimating the Timing of Geophysical Commitment to 1.5 and 2 degrees C of Global Warming. You can get more links and leads in my show blog at ecoshock.org. I'm Alex Smith reporting.
This is a climate emergency. Find out more on the blog, ecoshock.org.